TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that, so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do in your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let TruGreen take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn, while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. Get started today by visiting TruGreen.com. Because we all love a beautiful lawn, but not all the work that it takes to maintain it. So, you do you. Let TruGreen do your lawn care. Visit TruGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed. You can trust TruGreen to give you the best lawn because they're the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Visit TruGreen.com today. That's TruGreen.com.
Freaking first cut. Golly.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your DFS preview for the Farmers Insurance Open. And for the first time ever, we are running three wide for this week's episode. Joining me and back in the saddle, Greg Ducharme on a Monday. Hey, buddy.
Great to be back with us for Monday, and excited about the revolutionary three wide scene. I'm really looking forward to it. Sia, great to have you with us.
Thank you, Greg. I'm excited too, my friend. And I'll tell you what, now that football season's dwindling down, I think all our focus should be on the PGA at this point, right?
There you go. That's Sia Najad. He's got a lot of great ideas. Like, let's just focus on golf. That's what I do. Works out pretty well. Before we jump into this, gentleman, Greg, plug the show. Course record, new time slot, CBS Sports Network this week, 8 p.m. No, 11 p.m. Eastern time, right? Yeah. And then we got a new slot.
8 p.m. your time. Yeah, moving forward, it's going to be a 7 o'clock for the most part. Course record with Michael Breed, CBS Sports Network, Mondays, 7 p.m. It moved from 11 a.m. So we're really excited about that time slot. And the Sports Network has a golf block that's starting during Monday evening. So Monday is going to be the golf day on CBS Sports Network, which, to Sia's point, I mean, let's just talk about golf. Let's talk about the PGA Tour. That's what's going to be happening over there and over here as well. So lots going on Monday. It fires me up.
Oof. Gives me the warm and fuzzies. Let's turn our attention to the Farmers Insurance Open for this week, gentlemen, and see ya. Same thing we had last week, two course rotation, the North Course and the South Course in play at Torrey Pines. The South Course, that's the one everybody knows. That's the one in the video games. That's the one where we've had the U.S. Open. That's the one where all the great Tiger putts have come from. It's the South Course. That'll get three rounds. But the North Course, after the redesign a couple of years ago, is no longer a cupcake. It's got a three-hole stretch called the Undertow, which is one of the most difficult three-hole stretches on the PGA Tour. So scoring, Sia, birdies, they're certainly not going to be as frequent as we saw last week.
Which is kind of a relief, you know, because not just last week, but the week before that. I mean, when you have, I don't know, maybe I'm old school. I don't like to think that I am, but I don't really love seeing, like, you know, a six under be, you know, an average round. You know what I mean? Like, I want the golf course to kind of push back a little bit. And I think we're finally going to see that this week and in the coming weeks leading up to the Masters. So I'm actually quite excited for it.
Yeah, Greg, that's the one thing that I like the scoring. I don't mind it as much. I know others dislike it more than I do. The one thing, though, is when your guy shoots like a 64 in a round and doesn't make up much ground on the field, you're like, oh my God, like, what do I got to do around here?
Right. You love seeing your guy shoot 64. You just don't want everybody else to shoot 64 too. But I'm with you, Rick. I like seeing birdies. But at the same time, I appreciate the fact that golf's an outdoor game. So I like seeing birdies. I like seeing more difficult tests like this. And you may see some good scores this week. We've seen a winner get to 21 under in Justin Rose. But for the most part, you're more likely to see something between 10 and 15 under par. Now, the South Course was the seventh. Last year, it was the seventh toughest course on the PGA Tour. The North Course was the 33rd. Which I didn't get a chance to see how many courses they played last year, but 33, that's somewhere close to the middle of the pack. So not to your point, Rick, not a cupcake, still plays easier than the North or than the South rather, and still plays under par.
Yeah, usually get like 50 courses or something like that. So 33rd would be, yeah, a little bit easier than average. But I'll tell you what, they used to be in the 40s. That used to be a rollover. Right. And it is getting more difficult. The other thing is we're back on POA this week. So these greens, and I can speak a bit from experience playing Torrey Pines as much as I have, they're hard. I mean, there are nuances. Mark told us last night, there's going to be guys who miss 5 foot putts. It's going to happen this week, especially as the day goes on. That POA, it starts to bloom a bit, and it can cause some bumpy rides for balls in their endeavor towards the cup. So keep that in mind. There's going to be some short putts missed, but gentlemen, I want to start at the top of the player pool. And we've got 5 golfers over $10,000, led by Jon Rahm, then Rory McIlroy, Tony Finau, Xander Schauffele, Patrick Reed. Sia, we'll kick this to you first. Jon Rahm withdrew last week, cited, just kind of tweaked something. He said he could have played if he really had to, opted to just take the week off and set up for a week where he has dominated this golf course in the past.
Yeah, so I'm not so sure that was the reason he pulled out. I mean, it probably was, but regardless, if there's any noise about any sort of injury and potential aggravation, it sort of gives me a reason to maybe pivot off of him to who I think is probably the best guy in this field, and that's Rory McIlroy. And I'll admit, I'm usually trying to find reasons not to pick Rory McIlroy, and usually that pays off for me from a DFS standpoint. But I mean, he's been playing well, 5th at the Masters. Obviously, his track record here is very good, third place and a 5th place the last 2 times he's been here. And we know he's in pretty good form. So I'm trying to check boxes here. And as far as the top tier is concerned, Rory seems to check all the boxes.
All right, speaking of checking boxes, Greg, I mean, I actually think that a lot of these guys in the 10K range, we'll get to them. There's question marks, right? Rahm WDs last week for, who knows what the extent of that is. Rory, who played over in Dubai, not only does he have to make the trek this week, right? He's got to fly all the way over from Dubai through how many time zones? But what we saw from him was a little bit of Jekyll and Hyde last week. He had actually shot the round of the day in 2 separate rounds, Greg. Still didn't win the golf tournament because the other two were even par 72s, and he finishes 3rd to Tyrrell Hatton. So, I mean, again, we're now starting 2021 kind of in a similar place we ended 2020. Not sure what to make of Mr. McIlroy.
Right. You wonder when you're looking at this range, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this too, both of you, but you're looking for the guy that you feel like has a great chance of winning the tournament. And to me, I think that Jon Rahm and Rory McIlroy and Tony Finau as well, those three are very likely to play well. I'm expecting a solid performance out of them, but I have questions about them winning. Jon Rahm, as you highlighted, the other thing is, where is he with his equipment? He doesn't have a lot of reps underway with new equipment. So that's a question that that lies in my head. Now, I do think because of the way this golf course tends to play, I think Jon Rahm is still going to have a great week. And the reason for that is he's got a great short game. And so the reason I like that on this golf course, it's normally touted as a ball striker's golf course. You got to hit fairways, you got to drive it long and straight, and you got to hit a lot of greens. But the winners I've seen in the past are really more scramblers. You look at Mark Leishman last year, hit 3 fairways in the final round and wins. The year before, Justin Rose wins in 2019. That was a week he didn't know where the golf ball was going. He got it done largely with short game. And then you look, Tiger Woods is a scrambler by nature. Brant Snedeker has won here twice. I look at this golf course as one where you can scramble your way around because it's so difficult, because guys are going to miss fairways. They're not easy to hit. Guys are going to miss greens. They tend to get really firm. And I think Jon Rahm's short game is going to go a long way. Now, to that point, Patrick Reed is another guy that I really like this week. And he's played well here in the past. He's tied 6th last year, tied 13th the year before that, tied 23rd the year before that. I think it's a golf course that suits him well, and a scrappy competitor, I think, is going to have a great week this week.
I'm glad you brought up short game, because I run this model for every single course on the PGA Tour, and I look at the types of golfers that have success, what stats are those golfers good at, and then we compare it to every single course on the PGA Tour, and we find out what's going on. Well, strokes gained putting was essentially the most important of the common stats, not 150 to 175 from the left rough. That's some wonky stuff. But of like the common stats, strokes gained putting was actually the most important. And I think it goes into a lot of what you mentioned, Greg, which is scrambling by nature is what you have to do because you're not going to hit a lot of fairways. It's firm. You're going to get into some awkward positions around the greens. The POA is going to throw you through a loop in the afternoon. So guys who putt well tend to have great success here. And you rattled off a handful of those names. Sia, looking towards some of these other guys here in the 10K range, we have to talk about the local Xander Schauffele. He's told us he's played Torrey Pines 100 times, at least 100 times in his career. But in competition, it hasn't been all that good. Five starts here. Yeah, it's crazy, right? Five starts at top 20, T25, excuse me, and 4 missed cuts. It's shocking.
It's shocking, especially someone of the pedigree of Xander Schauffele. And, it, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, when you're at the casino and let's say you see a roulette wheel and it hits like red 5-6 times in a row and you're like, well, this next one, it's probably going to be black, right? But then it's red again and then it's red again. And I feel like that's what's going on with Xander. Like, I don't know when the right time is to pick him. I mean, maybe it's this week, but do I personally want to take that chance? Probably not.
I think this is such an interesting week because Torrey is consistent, Greg. I mean, usually plays similar, right? You're going to be penalized if you do miss the fairway. You're going to need to be sharp around the greens. You usually get a similar type of field here. So you'll see guys who have really great records and you'll see guys that have really poor records. It's almost like it's so consistent that these guys can't necessarily flip a switch if it doesn't fit them. And by all accounts, or at least by 5 years worth of results, this is not a good spot for Xander.
No, and it doesn't make much sense. But sometimes a home game in golf is hard. We don't have a lot of these. And if you've ever played your own course, your home course in a tournament, expectations tend to go way up. And it just puts a little bit of extra pressure on yourself. Conditions get a little firmer, a little faster this week. I mean, if you go play Torrey in a normal week, I don't know exactly, you would know better than me, Rick, how fast the greens are, but they change when you get into a Farmers Insurance Open, when you get into a U.S. Open, especially, they're going to change. They're going to get faster. And that changes the reads on your putts. So because these greens have so many different levels and shelves and you'll have tucked pins, there's a lot of heart-shaped greens out here where there's a back left pin and it's behind a bunker and you got 6 to cover. And if you go to the middle of the green, well, there's a ridge there. So now you're on the wrong tier. And it just, it gets difficult and it puts pressure on that short game and putting. And the best way I could describe it for Xander is he plays it more often when the conditions are maybe a little bit slower. And so the putts look and respond and play a little bit differently. And maybe that's one of the reasons why he struggles.
That is not an uncommon sentiment by tour players. I think we've heard, I'm going to butcher this. I actually think it was Ryan Palmer at Colonial made this point where he's like, yeah, I play Colonial all the time. It's my home course. But when you throw up the grandstands and you get in tournament-like conditions, it's different. It's just not how I'm used to it. Yeah. And we've heard a lot of guys say that. So I do think there's certainly something to it. Sia, let's bop down to the $9,000 range here. It's Harris English back in action. After two starts removed from his victory at the Sony Open. Sung J.M., 36-hole leader last week. Brooks Koepka, who, breaking news, apparently just split with Claude Harmon, his swing coach. That's something we can talk about. Hovland, Hideki, Matthew Wolf, and everybody's favorite Scottie Scheffler last week, who burned the vast majority of fantasy players. Who in this range do you like most?
Okay, first of all, I'm always a fan of Victor Hovland, but I'll leave that aside. I think Harris English is the most promising out of this group. I mean, by the way, speaking of what Greg brought up, the short game. I mean, he's been really good there. He's gaining strokes off the tee, obviously on approach. He's really been hitting the ball well. I mean, I think at the Century he was 32nd, which isn't great. But like you said, he won before that. And the two tournaments before that, I think he had a 5th and a 6th. So he's coming in great form. I mean, his history here isn't fantastic. But, I mean, in 2018, top 10. So that's certainly not bad. But given the recent form and where he's gaining, and, you know, again, the putting and the short game, I think he's going to have command of that. So I think I really expect him to be playing late on Sunday.
Yeah, he's just so solid. I mean, he's had an unbelievable 2020 season. He got off to a great start in 2021. I'm willing to give the guy a pass for finishing, you know, middle of the pack after you win for the first time in 7 years. I'm okay with that. Greg, Brooks Koepka, Let's talk about old Brooksy. So this just came across the wire a few minutes ago, apparently splitting with Claude Harmon as his swing coach. And I try not to read too much into this, but my heart really wants to be like, oh my God. Like anytime a guy does something like this, I feel like they're panicking or they think something needs to change. Brooks obviously coming off two consecutive missed cuts. I don't think that's the reason for it, but here we go. Now what is next for a guy who's already one of the biggest question marks of this year?
It continues. The question marks continue. Now, Brooks is a guy that does work on his game. I think Brooks works on his game a little bit more than people give him credit for. At least he did a couple of years ago. I worked at a club 4 years ago. He was a member there, and he worked on his game more than most tour pros on the range. So I if that continues and he's looking at a new coach, he seems to be a guy that can take something, a simple tip, a simple key, and kind of run with it. But I'm interested about this Harmon thing because he said last year Claude's going to be his coach for Claude's his coach indefinitely going forward, and he's moved on. So I'm looking for, is Brooks going to go at it his own? Is he going to come up with a new coach? Because those are two very different things. When you separate with a coach and you go on your own, that first week it doesn't really have that big of an effect, other than it begs the question, why did you separate? Are you now having doubts about what you and your coach have been working on? So we saw this with Jason Day last year, right? When he separated with Cole Swatton, and all of a sudden he reeled off a number of top 10 finishes in a row because he went to Fields, but it didn't stick. So what are we going to get? We could get a great week out of Brooks. He just kind of goes and freewheels it and plays and it grows great. But I think long-term, there's a lot more information that we're going to need going forward. But look, for me, I'm a little concerned about Brooks this week. I think it's going to demand great golf, and I have my concerns with him right now.
I guess we found out how long indefinitely is for Brooks, about a year. Right. So I actually like Brooks's outright number to win this golf tournament than I do kind of rostering him for DFS purposes.
I could go with that.
Yeah. Right. He owns a lot of the win equity, but the missed cut downside in fantasy is not great. Sia, are you willing to, we play the forgive and forget game, right? Are you willing to forgive and forget what Scottie Scheffler did last week? He was not only one of the most popular golfers in terms of fantasy, he was very popular in one and done pools. He was the guy, and he gave everybody a big fat zero. Are you willing to go back to him?
No, I'm not. And I'll tell you what, there are guys that I'm willing to go back to. We'll talk about them later on in the show, but Scheffler is just not going to be one of them. And honestly, the main reason is just because I like more guys in this range than I did last week. I mean, I don't know what Scheffler's clearly not going to be quite as chalky. So maybe he's a smarter play in DFS this week versus last week. But no, I just like too many other guys in this range and right below this range to hit Scheffler again.
Before we move on, we just kind of mentioned Victor Hovland, and Greg, I want to get your take on this because I obviously see both sides of the coin here. The guy is a phenomenal ball striker. He hits it long enough off the tee. If you're playing from the short grass, and if you're playing from further down the fairway than everybody else, you're in good shape. But you mentioned something that I think could be troublesome is there's a lot of missed greens out here. There's a lot of awkward putts, awkward chips. Victor's told us himself, short game not so great now. He can figure it out. He won twice last year. The guy won twice last year. It's kind of hard to wrap your brain around, but I'm not sure where he fits into Torrey Pines.
I understand completely what you're saying. I look at and Matthew Wolff as well, and I have my questions in that area for both of them. And look, they're aggressive players, and they can make a ton of birdies, and they can play hard golf courses really well. It's not at all what I'm saying. It's just this course, the greens, the way that they're sectioned, you have to kind of take one of two approaches. You're going to be really aggressive and try to get it on the right shelf, or you're going to try to just hit it on the green. Oh, and by the way, when you do that, when you make that aggressive play, you're going to miss some greens. You're going to hit great shots that miss greens.
That's what I tell people. I hit a lot of great shots, but I just keep missing these greens.
Yeah, look, and that's Torrey, right? You just say, look, oh, well, it's because I play Torrey Pines. So if you kind of take your medicine and hit it to the middle of the green, and now you're left with difficult putts all day, and these guys are just trained to make birdies. So I worry a little bit about the short games of these players. That being said, especially with Hovland, because of where his game has been, I think he's always a solid play. I'm not licking my chops and no hard eye emoji right now for Victor Hovland. I don't think he's a fade, but I prefer like Hideki Matsuyama to me. I actually prefer this week over Hovland.
Yeah, I should have pulled this up before we started. I wanted to kind of see results at Torrey in like the first couple of starts because Hovland's played here once. Sia, he missed the cut. Scotty Scheffler's played here once. He's missed the cut. Wolf's played here once. It was a T21. It's even harder, I think, to try to model out or project the young guys, especially at a place that I do think Torrey requires some level of inside information, insider knowledge. And some of these courses, they just show up and it's like, I'll just pick apart birdies all day long. I don't think that's what happens here. So I wish I would have pulled that up, but I do think that experience matters.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think we're going to see that with a lot of our picks as this kind of matriculates. We're going to see a lot of people that we're picking have like decent course experience in terms of like 1, 2, 3 years under their belt. So I totally agree. In fact, once we get to the 8K range, I mean, there's a couple guys I like that aren't super popular names, but their course history here is absolutely fantastic.
There is definitely some course history in the 8K range. We are going to get to that and the 7K and the 6K range. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk. No. You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. $8,000 range. Siwoo Kim, our latest winner on the PGA Tour. Bubba Watson, Mark Leishman, all the way down to Ricky Fowler, Louis Oosthuizen. And there are course history names in here. Greg, I'll start with you. Who in this range are you most excited about? I've got a guy in this range that's won this event twice. How about that?
Well, that's won it twice. Oh, what do you got? Brant Snedeker?
Jason Day, right?
Oh, I think Jason Day's won it once.
Is he?
Okay. You know better than me. So Jason Day is interesting to me. And there's a couple reasons, kind of similar to what Brooks Koepka has going on. He is making some changes, right? Jason Day's got a mixed bag of equipment going this week. No longer with just TaylorMade. So he's got a mixed bag. We know that he's got a new swing coach in Chris Cuomo. So I think there's some very interesting things going on with Jason Day, and I'm watching him closely. And in fact, I think he's going to have a good week. I really like Jason Day because it's the kind of golf course he knows how to score on. So I like him. The other guy that I really like in this range is Ryan Palmer, and Ryan Palmer has been playing pretty well of late. He came in fourth at the Century Tournament of Champions. He has a nice course history here. A couple of top 20 finishes. I think he was tied 13th 2 years ago. And he's got this kind of smooth way about him. It's a really smooth swing. He drives it really well. He hits a ton of greens of regulation. I know that's going to be a challenge this week, but he this year is hitting over 73% of his greens this week. And he converts those. He makes a ton of birdies. He's second on tour in birdie average. So combine those two things, I think you're going to get a great week out of Ryan Palmer. He's probably my favorite play in the 8K range. And I like Jason Day as well.
Jason Day won this event in 2015. He won it in 2018. He had a runner-up finish in 14. He finished fifth in 19. So a lot of great vibes around here. I do really like the Ryan Palmer call. I mean, even the T21 that he had last year, I would argue it was better than that because I'm pretty sure he played in the final group on Sunday and he shot like a 75 and finished T21 and it wasn't his day, but for 3.5 rounds, he played awesome. Sia, let's throw this over to you because we've got defending champion Mark Leishman in this range. We've got Ricky Fowler, who we are waiting for to wake up? I mean, there's just a lot going on here.
Yeah, well, we talked about Ricky last week, Rick, and I was like, no, no Ricky whatsoever. Don't try to convince me. But, you know, I kind of was wrong a little bit, right? Because last Friday, he was really, really good, and he flashed a little bit of that old Ricky that we think he is. With that said, even though his price is really reasonable at 8,000 on DraftKings, I'm not going to do it. I mean, he's going to be a fade for me until I see some consistency. But I got to say, I absolutely love the Ryan Palmer play. Speaking of just value, I mean, 8,200 on DraftKings, this guy was 7,000 when he came in fourth at the Century. Then he gets priced up to 9,200 just, 5 days later and basically middles out at the Sony. And now he's like sort of back down to a price range I think is going to be palatable. I think from a DFS standpoint, he's going to be really popular because, listen, everybody's going to look at his recent history. Everybody's going to look at his course history. And everybody's going to look at his strokes gained metrics, and his ball striking is fantastic. So it's just one of those things that, like, it's going to have to be like chalk you're going to eat as opposed to bad chalk, because I do expect him to have another great tournament. I'll throw in one other guy that doesn't grade out super well. In terms of the metrics, Cam Smith. I mean, he hasn't been very good lately either. I think he's more suited for maybe like a tougher course than the last two he's been on, which have been more of the resort variety. So I think Cam Smith is a guy that will have a lower ownership percentage that could win you a DFS tournament.
I do like the idea of Cam Smith grinding for sure. I do think that he's not going to win something at 25 under, but 11, 12, 13. Now we're talking kind of Cam Smith's range. Greg, I want to get your opinion on one guy. So it's Billy Horschel. And little anecdote here. We have this guy, I believe his username is Tokyo Swan, who is a very loyal viewer of this show, Greg. He's responds to a lot of the tweets. And this guy is Billy Horschel's biggest fan. And I see it all the time. And I'm finally like, I got to look into this Billy Horschel guy and see what the heck's going on. What's happening here? Seventh at Sony. That's the last time we saw him. Fifth at Mayakoba. He has two top 10 finishes here in the last 5 years. He is different from the style of golfer that I usually like, Greg, because Horschel is going to rely on a flat stick, and you're going to have to hope it gets hot, and you're going to have to hope that the rest of his game holds it together. But we talked about how important putting is this week, and having a lot of these, we'll call it 12 footers to save par and things like that, that can keep the momentum of your rounds going. I don't hate Billy Horschel.
You know, he is a guy that leaves me scratching my head all the time. Billy Horschel, because there are a number of courses, especially when we get into the summertime, when you get to some of those courses where, I think of him in New Orleans. I think of him playing really well at Wyndham. I think of him playing really well at some of those, like 3M Rocket Mortgage. His name always pops up in my head of a guy who I think is going to have a great week. And then even in the spring, like RBC Heritage seems to be a great tournament for him. And so I always wonder with Billy Horschel, what does he do really well? And you look at his statistics, it is putting. And so what we see here at this golf course is he has two top tens. One was in 2019, and the other was 2016, a tied eighth and an eighth place finish. And he's made a number of cuts, 7 out of 10 cuts he's made. So it's okay course history here. And this is the thing about putting being important. You have to have a great putting week, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to rely on putting, if that makes sense. You are going to rely on putting, but I don't necessarily love guys who are just strictly relying on putting going into the week. It's one of those things where, like, a John Rahm is a great ball striker, but he's also more likely than most to have a great putting week. So I like that. Now, I know he's the highest priced player in the field, number two ranked player in the world. I understand the difference here, but I think you understand my point. I'm not loving Billy Horschel because I think there's questions about his iron play and his driver more so than, say, a Ryan Palmer or somebody like that, who also has a great short game to back it up.
One of my favorite moments at Torrey Pines, do you remember that year where things went sideways? I think it was 2016, and it was like 40 mile an hour winds. It was like raining cats and dogs. I think, I don't know if they finished on Monday or whatever. But
this was when Brant Snedeker won after making the cut on the number. Patrick Cantlay almost did it last week.
He made the cut on the number, and he got in before the bad weather came, and then like no one shot under par after that, and he just winds up with the trophy. But there was a moment, I can't remember who Billy Horschel was playing with, but somebody drained like a 50-foot putt in these ridiculous conditions, and all you see in the background is Billy Horschel running around with his hat on backwards like this. Like, it's so funny. I'll have to find the clip and tweet it out. It's like my favorite moment ever.
Guys won a FedEx Cup too. I mean, he's a great player.
Yeah, it's so good. So I'll have to tweet that that clip out. $7,000 range. This is very interesting. Sia, we have another very popular golfer from last week in Sam Burns that burned everybody. We've got Emiliano Grillo and Jordan Spieth. Jordan Spieth back making his 2021 debut in this range. Where will you be allocating your resources this week?
First of all, I'm very mad at you for being so convincing last week on Sam Burns, because of course I jammed him in a couple lineups too, and I was like, Rick.
In my defense, the guy shot like a 66 on Friday, looked phenomenal, made an eagle. That was the Sam Burns we wanted. It was the fact that he shot a rusty 77 on Thursday and played himself out of it. That was the bad stuff.
Well, no, and honestly, that's the point I'm ultimately going to make, because he did show why we picked him on Friday as opposed to Thursday. And listen, he has weaknesses in his game, but he also has strengths as they relate to this course, the South course in particular. Obviously, we know he's long off the tee. You know, his approach game isn't bad. Short game could be a little bit better. But given how he played on Friday and the fact that we liked him last week, I don't think it's appropriate to be like, oh, he's a complete fade now. I mean, I think you have to take whatever your analysis was last week. If it can be applied to this week, which it absolutely can, then I think Sam Burns is a smart play. As far as other guys I like, I think Sam Burns is good. I think Cam Davis is probably my favorite in this range. Obviously, we know he can hit it pretty long. His history here isn't great, but then again, he's a younger guy, so he's kind of maybe potentially coming into his own. Recent history isn't fantastic, but I think he grades out really well on this course.
I agree with you on Burns. I think if you are taking one round into consideration, only one round to make decisions, that's probably the wrong way to do it. I'm not as warm on Cam Davis for this week as you might be, Sia, because and I'm bullish on Cam Davis. I love the kid. He's got all the raw talent in the world. I think he's going to be great for a long time. I'm worried about the 5.5 strokes he gained putting last week. I'm worried about the fact that he holes out from the fairway for an eagle, which is both skill and luck. I'm just worried that there is a bit of regression coming for him, but I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. We'll see. The biggest name for me, I think, in the 7K range, Greg, is Gary Woodland, coming back from an injury, trying to figure it all out. I can talk about him. Is there someone else in this range that gets you all amped up to roster?
Okay. So one,
that's good. That's good when you start your response with, okay.
All right. So the reason I do that is there are two guys that I want to be early on. I want to jump on the bandwagon. One is Jordan Spieth with after seeing Butch. I want to jump in there and I want to say, yeah, okay, look, Jordan Spieth is 7,600 on DraftKings, and it's his first event of the year, right? So I really like giving him a chance here. I like taking that chance on him here and saying maybe Butch had something to do. And then you add to it, you're not going to have to go shoot 25 under this week. You're not going to have to make a ton of birdies. You're going to have to grind your way around. And Jordan Spieth's exactly that. He's a grinder. So I think this could be a good start, a good risky start for him to kind of see how the year goes. Now, you have to understand, if you play Jordan Spieth this week, it may not work. You may end up with a miscut. That's why he's 7,600. There's a good likelihood of that. But to me, I want to, for a very, very rare occurrence, this hasn't happened in 3 years, I want to be early on Jordan. So I'm going to take, I may take a chance on him. The other guy I would take a chance on going early on is Francesco Molinari, because I see a T8 last week. I think he had some really nice days striking the ball. There was one round he gained 2 strokes approaching the green. He was positive putting and positive tee to green. So I really like Francesco Molinari in one aspect. Again, it's the same thing where there's a lot of risk involved. But these guys have the talent, and I believe they have real win equity, and they could win you a tournament. They could win you a DFS tournament. So I like those players. The other guy that I really like is Taylor Gooch. And Taylor Gooch is a player that I think this year he is trending in the right direction. I think he's going to have a really nice year. It was a nice week last week for him. And I think he's going to keep it rolling and play great again. Play great again this week.
The two things about Jordan Spieth. So in theory, Greg, I agree with you on getting a little exposure to Jordan Spieth this week. And the two main things are, if you're going to play him, you have to be early. And it would be advantageous for you to do it after a long break, right? Like when a guy's at what is essentially rock bottom, which is what I hope Jordan Spieth is at. I hope it doesn't go any lower than this. You want him off of a long break where he's been able to try to figure it out, work hard, all that good stuff. The other thing about it is, even if he becomes 65% of himself from 2 years ago or 3 years ago, he has more win equity than everybody else in this range. Right. So I think that's the two sides of it, that if you're ever going to play Spieth, you have to play him right now.
And if he comes in tied eighth, like Molinari did last week, he'll be 10,000 next week. Right. I mean, his price is going to skyrocket. So that's why I may take the risk and be early on.
I'm looking at the rest of this $10,000 range. The bottom of it features Phil Mickelson, who I cannot in good conscience roster indefinitely, right? We'll use Brooks's word, maybe next year. Indefinitely, I cannot roster Phil Mickelson. And then Sia, the other guy who's been catching a lot of steam recently, and we were kind of on the wrong weeks with this, is Doug Gim. Gim was super popular at the Sony Open. He misses the cut. I think everybody hopped off, and he goes out and finishes fifth at the American Express. He has a much smaller sample size than most. His last couple of starts have been better ball striking weeks. Is it him, or is there anybody else down here in the 7K range that might end up making some of your rosters?
You took the name right out of my mouth. It is Doug Gim. And frankly, you know, obviously he had a fifth last week, but even on this course, he's had a top 20. In 2019, he had a 20. Of course, in 2020, he missed the cut. But Doug Gim, by the way, I mean, it wasn't smoke and mirrors last week. I mean, he struck the ball really well. If my memory serves, his driving distance wasn't terrible. I mean, he's thought to be a shorter hitter, but I think he was hitting it about 300 last week. His accuracy was good. I mean, greens and regulation was good. Everything measured out really well for him. And so at this price, speaking of getting somebody early, I mean, I know at this point we all know who Doug Gim is, the man with the most boring name ever. But at the same time, he is like legitimately potentially a good golfer. So here we are at 7,200. Like, I'll take some Gim for sure.
Tom Lewis is the guy with the most boring name ever, I think. He's in the same price. Oh, no, he's 6,800. I think that's the most boring. Gim is
Tom
at least.
Tom Hoog is right up there too.
Yeah, there's a couple of bad ones. Greg, let's hop down to the $6,000 range. And this is where things start to get a little bit murky. Harry Higgs, Henrik Norlander, JB Holmes, JT Poston, they're up near the top. You scroll all the way down to the bottom and you get, Ted Potter Jr., Kevin Stadler, some names that you certainly don't want to roster. So who in this range do you want to roster?
I may take a chance with the Tom Hoogie, who came in fifth last year. He gave me a great tournament last year, which was a really impressive one. And again, I get back to this thing where you want to hang your hat on something when you get down into these ranges. What is it that a player does well? What is it a player that you like where you can say, okay, I can hang on to this. I can back a player because of X reason. And for Tom Hoogie, it's strong iron play. He's 67th this year, strokes gained approach the green. And last year he was 35th for the entirety of the year, which I really like. He makes plenty of birdies, 4.5 birdies per round last year. He doesn't necessarily drive it the way you would like, but I look at him as a guy who could have another potentially great week, even though he's coming off of two missed cuts. I think he could kind of get back onto Tom Hoogie. He could turn things around. He did have a tied third at the Mayakoba Golf Classic back in 2020, but I think this could be a week where he gets it going.
I've identified two names in this range. Number one is Kramer Hickok. I'm going right back to that. Well, it's $6,800. He's got a 19th at Sony. He follows it up with a 21st at the American Express. But what I love is he's great off the tee. He led the field in strokes gained off the tee last week. Of course, only three measured rounds there at the stadium course. He was great the week before. I think he was top five off the tee the week before. So he is really developing that driver as a weapon. And then the other name that I'm looking at is your guy, Greg, Richie Wierenski. You know, it's easy to forget he won a golf tournament on the PGA Tour last year because COVID and the 91 days that we missed, because it ran opposite of a WGC, it's just easy to forget he won. And he played well at the American Express last week. He's got a top 20 under his belt at this event. I mean, Sia, we're down in the 6K range here. I'm not asking for much from these guys, right? A missed cut, finding the weekend would be plenty for me.
Yeah, and by the way, I like Richie Wierenski a lot too. And you recall, we talked about Cramer Hickok last Monday. I mean, the guy has been striking the ball really well. And if you rostered him, he was probably around 4%, and he was helping your DFS team for sure through the weekend. Other guys I like, I mean, obviously when we get in this range, we're kind of punting, right? I think Luke List, if he can get the short game in order, I think obviously he can hit it long. He measures out well for this course in terms of a good course fit. I do like Luke List. I like Richie Wierenski quite a bit. And then if I'm going super deep punt, this is a guy that was kind of a fantasy darling maybe 6-7 months ago. Mm-hmm. He was like somewhere in that hovering in that mid 7K range. And now he's in the low 6K range. Anybody want to venture a guess at this guy?
I think I actually know the answer to this. Is it? So because you said fantasy darling, the only guy that I could attribute in this range would be Will Gordon.
You are correct.
Nice.
That's the other. I'm like, there's no way anybody thought these guys were darlings. These other guys.
Very nice.
Yeah. I mean, Will Gordon is kind of interesting. And I wonder, and Greg, you know, looking at the composition of this entire field, what we started this show with is we were like, there's a lot of question marks at the top. There's a lot of question marks in the 10K range. I don't know if I'll end up kind of taking a stars and scrubs approach or if I will opt for a more balanced approach because of those question marks. I don't know if you have a hunch in potentially the right path to go here, but what do you think so far on a Monday afternoon?
I feel I'm feeling a little more of the balanced approach. Although John Rahm sitting there just kind of, he just has my interest. It's just hard to... It's hard to scroll past him. So it's interesting. So I don't know. There's one other guy that I may take a chance with. I'm feeling in this lower in the 7K, the lower 7K and the 6K range. Like you're punting is a good word. But it feels like you're just kind of taking a chance and hoping. And if you go a little safer in the 7K range, or maybe you get somebody in the 8 and you're looking for another 6, I got one other guy I want to take a shot on. And it may be a Keith Mitchell. Now, the reason tied 14th at the Sony Open, and Rick, we've talked about this before. Last year, we talked about this a little bit. He tends to do well on hard golf courses. Doesn't really do well. Like the Sony Open finish is almost surprising to me because that he typically doesn't do that. He does well on hard golf courses.
Yeah, right. Short he won Honda, right? And he went Honda.
Yeah, I want to say at 9 under.
That sounds right. Yeah, because that's PGA Nationals
8, I think.
Yeah, such a beast. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if he may give you a good week. But again, it's just such a blind dart throw. And I would go with one of those guys because John Rahm's so attractive. So
Okay, see ya. Balanced build or stars and scrubs.
It's definitely not going to be stars and scrubs. What I would say is it's kind of more of a hybrid approach. So, I mean, I like the idea of taking a star like a John Rahm or a Rory McIlroy, and then just kind of maybe dropping into that low 7K range for one guy. And then you'll find from just a dollars and cents standpoint, you'll have plenty of money to take some of those middle guys in that 8K range, maybe even upper 8K range, depending on what you do in the 7K range. So in other words, I might have to skip over, you know, most of the 9K range if I want to grab like a Rory. But I do want a star. I do want, say, they don't have to be in that top 5 or 6, but I do want somebody that I think can win somebody in that top 7 or 8, because again, we are at more challenging courses and we're not going to see as many kind of lower tier names pop up on the leaderboards come Sunday, in my opinion.
I like it. Okay, gentlemen. I mentioned at the top, the North Course now has the Undertow, which is a very difficult three-hole stretch that when I played a couple of weeks ago, I think I was like three or four over, which not good, boys. But I'm trying to think of what other stretches have names. So there's the Undertow, the Bear Trap,
the Snake Pit, the Green Mile.
Oh, the Green. I would not have remembered the Green Mile. The Green Mile. Is that it? I wouldn't even, I think you got two I wouldn't have gotten, Greg. Huh,
there you go. There's got to be more. You got the Bear Trap's the most obvious one.
Amen Corner?
Oh, yeah.
It's almost hard to consider Amen Corner. That's like a class of its own, right? But I guess it is a three-hole stretch. It's definitely the most famous. But okay, don't you think that's like a little bit above? It's like a tier above.
Well, it's funny because like most weeks, the names that they put are kind of corny, but when you get to Amen Corner, you're like, oh, this is it. I have the list up now. So the ones we named, the Horrible Horseshoe. So that's Colonial. That's three, four, and five.
Yeah.
This one doesn't have a name. Okay. These are just the most difficult stretches, but not all of them have names. So we got them all. And then the Horrible Horseshoe seems to be the ones that are named.
Sweet.
Love it.
It's good marketing.
I completely agree. It's corny, but I completely agree. The fact that I remember when they redesigned the North and then they actually opened it up to like a naming contest. And I think if they picked the name that you put out, I forget what you won, but it was like so many rounds at Torrey Pines and all this other stuff, which I thought was not only good for marketing, but now you're going to hear it 100 times on the telecast. It's going to be 100%. Fun. Yeah. Gentlemen, much appreciated. That's Sia Najad. You can find him on Twitter at Sia Najad. That's Greg Ducharme. You can find him on Twitter at The Real GFD. Producer Jacob, thank you very much. Behind the glass, you can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.